All right, welcome to today's interview. Mike Adams here, the Health Ranger, founder of Brighteon.com, free speech platform where we encourage people to speak freely and we invite people to join us who also speak freely but think freely. I mean, anybody can speak. The question is, what mind is behind your words? And today we're joined by two very intriguing individuals who have brilliant minds. You probably have not heard of them before because the first time guests with us, but they do have other projects that we'll talk about out on the internet. So we have Sam Friedman joining us from Stockholm, Sweden, and then his associate known as The Greek joining us. And we're going to cover some fascinating topics today that will blow your mind. So welcome, Sam and The Greek. It's great to have you with me today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me just tell my audience that I saw a video clip from Sam, and we don't have to go into details about what project that's for or anything, but it was just like a little demo clip, and it was so intriguing, Sam, about what you were talking about, and especially being that you're in Sweden, and so much of Europe has gone off the rails, as much of the United States as well. So, you know, here we are, islands of, I think, reason in a sea of woke insanity at the moment. So I had to invite you on. So what would you tell people about a little bit about your background, and also for The Greek? Give us a little background so that people can have kind of a starting point for this conversation.
Sure. Thank you, first of all, for having us. It's always a pleasant surprise when people take interest in what you're doing. So it's great to be chatting with you, Mike. In terms of my background, I'm not anyone of any public renown. Most of my work is done privately, though I have been a part of a few public-facing projects with The Greek. I'm not quite an armchair philosopher, because that sometimes implies laziness, but I'm not a public intellectual either, so perhaps I'd call myself an aspiring intellectual or an impromptu journalist, but certainly an all-around student of many things. In terms of background, I'm an interview journalist, mostly with a history in the music business, running different websites for interviewing people in the audio world, like studio owners, recording engineers, and then also music executives. But most recently, I've pivoted from that into producing interview-centric video content, podcasts, documentaries, anything with an interview focus. And that's how, you know, that video got put together, which I shared with you at one point, mostly talking about the media. As far as my associate here, The Greek, we've worked on a few projects together, and I'll let him talk about himself.
Okay. Go ahead, The Greek.
All right. Yeah, sure. Well, what I say about myself is I'm just visiting this world taking notes.
And, I like it.
I realized at a really young age that objectivity and truth was something that was not either objective or truthful, right? So I started thinking about it, and I said, well, why don't I make this sort of a sideline pursuit since I was, you know, pre-adolescent even. And at the age of the internet, which I consider, let's say, the heyday was probably about 10 years ago, many people were encouraging me to call in on radio shows or, you know, do various conferences or whatever on the internet. And I found that more people than I ever imagined had interest on what really is going on. And when I say what really is going on is mastering your reality, that just the reality that is just immediate in front of you within a 5-foot radius. Are you
right.
Are you just paying attention? And just briefly, as we spoke, we're going to be coming into an age of competency, sort of how there was an age of enlightenment, let's say 200 or 300 years ago attempted. What I mean by competency is to be competent. It doesn't mean you're intelligent or smart. It just means that you know what you're saying, you mean what you say, and you know what you're doing. And that's pretty much what the Greek speak element, all the elements of Greek speak are, and usually cover anywhere between 10 to 36 subjects, and show people how easy it is to achieve close to mastery of any subject without being a quote-unquote professional, which I define as someone who's always learning more and more about less and less.
So, okay, well, that's really fascinating. I'm really glad you started with that, because both of you are big picture thinkers. You understand the cycles of history, the cycles of consciousness, the cycles of you know, the rise and fall of human civilization. So let me pose a question. This will be to Sam first, but I'd like both of you to answer it. When I look around, I see that we're in the final chapter, it looks like to me, in the age of incompetence. So we have institutional leaders and government leaders and media leaders and so on, who demonstrate just stunning incompetence. I guess the most recent example is this Signature Bank that collapsed in New York. They were experts at making music videos featuring themselves virtue signaling to music. They were horrible at risk assessment and managing the money of their depositors, right? So totally incompetent in the area where they claim to be professionals, but yet they had this side competency of being pretty good at singing and dancing, which is fine unless you're a banker, right? So do you agree with me that we're about to switch out of this age of incompetence, or that we're even in such an age? Or how would you describe it? Let's start with you, Sam. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I would say that there is an age in which we're living that most people don't know what they're doing, and particularly the people who call themselves the leaders. It's very interesting how the competency that you would expect these people to display really isn't there. And you have to wonder if it's duplicitous merely or also malevolent, because sometimes it feels like that level of incompetency can't be reached without it being, you know, evil in some way, or something evil that's animating it. You know, these are things that the Greek has elaborated on endlessly over the years. And, you know, I've only gotten into this line of study in the past 4 or 5, but I have found that the incompetency is underpinned by some type of malevolence that's hard to put your finger on, and that you have to look into and be wary of not getting spun into la-la land with conspiracy theories, but actually be objective about.
Well, it seems like this age of incredibly easy money, you know, 0% interest rates, the illusion of economic abundance, where at the core it's not really there, but this allowed a lot of people to pretend like they were competent, to pretend like they were in business or making money or producing profits, when in fact you peel back that layer and you realize, hey, there's nothing there. These people had no idea what they were doing.
What strikes me about the Western world is how its economies, especially in the 21st century, sort of built themselves not on the idea of running profitable businesses, but on the credit system that creates this disproportionate amount of funds from a place that most people can't explain. And part of the reason I think why the third world stays so poor isn't just because it's exploited, it's also because their financial institutions don't have easy access to these credit facilities that grant them seemingly infinite money. So, the Western world amasses all this cash flow and economic activity because of its credit system. And then it parks billions of it into investment banking to fund all these companies. And I think we see this development really kick into overdrive in the 2010s with Silicon Valley and consumer tech startups, and a number of these companies pop up around a decade ago and promise to change everybody's life when it comes to, you know, working, exercising, eating, shopping, cooking, et cetera. So basically the Ubers, the Airbnbs, the WeWorks, the DoorDashes. And they barely own any real world infrastructure or assets or do real things, but they control entire industries by monopolizing information. And to maximize their growth, you know, they suppress their prices enormously through the money that comes from venture capital, which is effectively a subsidy. And I think one of the most notable VCs in that space is the Vision Fund, which is this investment company founded by a Japanese bank called SoftBank. But they have like $150 billion under management, mostly from sovereign wealth funds of Saudi Arabia and UAE. Yeah. And a lot of their money gets invested into these companies like Uber and DoorDash and WeWork. And so, you know, the brands are able to take over the market because they're so much cheaper than their competitors, but most of them are never profitable. They're just surviving right on this Middle Eastern oil money and whatnot.
And SoftBank, and so, also Vision Fund funded FTX too, by the way. You probably know that, but they were involved indeed in that as well. To the Greek, then, what are your thoughts on the transition of the age here, if that's what you would call it?
Oh great. You know, when you introduced the transition of the age prior, you said about the age, which is time, and then money, you went right to the bank. I want to give two compressed versions, two compressed like seeds to be planted that can be uncompressed later. I'll give you the choice. Would you like the dose of time or the dose of the financial system first?
No, let's talk about time, because that's okay, the construct great in which we operate. So,
oh sure, okay. In terms of time, I'm going to shoot a 2-hour film using old film, right? A movie. Do I buy exactly 2 hours worth of film, or do I buy 2 hours and 10 minutes because I need to roll credits at the end? Right.
You need to buy like 200 hours of film because you're gonna edit most of it.
let's say there is no editing; it's straight run. It's like the Hitchcock, The Rope, right? So in this case, what I mean is, it's a 2-hour film, but at 2 hours, the people are still in their seats watching the credits, but it's okay to speak over it. You know, people aren't gonna tell you to shut up when the credits are rolling, right? That's where we're in right now. The credits started rolling around 1998. When you're looking at the ages of 2,000 year chunks, around 1998, this is from the scriptural biblical timekeeping. It's also from your 20th century prophets. A lot of people in the metaphysical world, the Blavatskys, the Caseys, also said this, right? Ironically, I had not gotten it from them, though. I had gotten it from ancient writs. So what's interesting is since the credits started rolling around 1998, we have about a 40 or so year period. So over a 6,000 year period, 40 years of credits seems to be proportional. And what I mean about it's important to view it as you're in the credits is during the film, people expect a certain etiquette. But when the credits are rolling, the film is still in action, but it's okay to speak. It's okay to stand up. Some of the lights start coming on, right? But what you also notice about the credits rolling is all of the stuff that was behind the scenes that was not on the film itself.
Right. They'll do outtakes and things like that.
Sure. Or also just mentioned, like during the film, you don't know who was the key grip, but now you do.
Right.
So after 1998, you're going to start seeing a movement toward, hey, do you know that this society is being run by secret societies of this, 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 and that? Do you know that this was really invented back then? Do you know, you see a lot of what is basically the fabric and underpinning of the alternative media, whether it's history, economics, whatever, even the medical, there's all this stuff that's been coming out, you know, the travails of the Catholic Church, right? All these things are a religion. Every topic under the sun now is experiencing a minor upheaval where these things are being brought out into the open. The other thing that's happening right now that I would like to overlap, that it's a movie, we're watching the credits. The etiquette now has changed. It's okay to stand up and speak. The lights are coming on. What will happen when the credits are end is the lights come on and the screen comes up and you see a brick wall, right? That's the end of the credits. We're still about a decade or so from that.
And then everybody realizes they've been living in a scripted Truman Show.
Right. Reality. And in short, what does that mean? It means total collapse of your infrastructure, meaning none of the government employees are going to work. None of the power station employees are going to work. None of the water people are going to work. None of the road people are going to work. None of the banks are going to work, right? Infrastructure collapse, right? So when you think about what society will be is basically you hit the light switch, there's no light. You turn on the plumbing, there's no water. It over a gradual period, right? And we've heard the stories of what happens with that, right? After just about, 10 days without power or something, right? Everyone has heard that. Okay. But what's also interesting, what's happening is we're having revival of philosophies, religions, sciences, perceptions, ideologies from the ancient past that has been obscured from our history. So when you start seeing all this stuff happening, for example, with the gender bending or how the medical community is doing, so how government is running things or how religions are changing. Those things have happened way back in the past. Right. And when they happen again, we think it's something new. No, it's just a revival, right, of something very ancient. So I tell people, if you want to really know something new about what's coming, read an old book. And I mean really, really old. Basically, anything that was written in the past 1902, 1895, or 1920 for sure is already been censored very heavily. So you know, if you want to get a grip or a taste of how people thought and what was known to be coming is very clear in 19th century. I always say that everything that could have been known was known by the late 19th century. That's why you see there's I'm not a big proponent of flat earth or mud flood, but you'll notice there's a lot of talk about what happened in the middle or end by the end of the 19th century. All these orphans, all this high tech. We don't understand the architecture, right? All this stuff. So I really like people to have a view on that. Also, in terms of timekeeping, you're on what I call the Pope's work schedule, which is a schedule. You have the work week and the weekend, and Monday through Friday, January through December. Let me just bring this up in terms of timekeeping. Organic timekeeping, meaning the time that the planet uses, the whales, the bugs, the birds, the bees, the plants, they don't go on the Gregorian calendar or the wind-up toy known as the clock. For example, the day starts at solar noon, not midnight, not sundown. right? You can measure it with a sundial. That's why years ago, if you did regular banking before the electronic convention, if you deposited a check after noon, it was counted as the next day. In the Wild West, when they had court, they hung you high. The next day, they hung you right from for whatever it was at when? At high noon. So the day ends at solar noon. This is, by the way, in your academic paperwork. If you go to University for Astronomy, they tell you that the day starts at solar noon for scientific and astronomical purposes. But for the people, it's civil midnight. It's kind of like a put down, right? Like the old dictionaries, when they defined the word oats, they said this: what we feed horses in England, but the staple of the people in Scotland, right? Kind of a So the moon, what's interesting about the full moon, most people see the full moon and say, oh, how beautiful, or it's this moon or that moon, or people tend to act strange. Do you know, for thousands of years, people settled their debts before the full moon came, or the new, it's really the new moon. That's why today, when they, don't you get these things called bills in the mail on what? On a monthly basis, don't you? Isn't that interesting? Right? So also the full moon is the new moon because you take a measurement with it. Time has to be precise. You cannot measure any kind of a moon calendar or lunar cycle with the sliver that they're calling the dark moon. So what's interesting is once you start to put these things in alignment, so people want to do biblical holidays, when it says the 13th day of the first month, it's not January 13th, you see. These things are all measured by astronomical bodies. Mm-hmm. Because you don't have to buy a clock, you don't have to buy a calendar, and it doesn't change. See, so time is important. That's I did a Sonic event recently about timekeeping, and no matter how successful someone thinks they are in this society or any society and is basing their time, which has circadian rhythm, biological clocks, and all that, on what I call the wind-up toy known as the clock or the Gregorian calendar, you will always feel like you're missing out on something. There is just something that you're not aligned with, right?
Yeah.
So,
Well, yeah, I have a comment on that, and I also want to mention your website or your interview
project
content. Yeah, it's called Ocelli and the Greek, O-C-H-E-L-L-I, and that's at ocelli.com. I've got it on screen there.
That's right.
And your show is called Rated Y. Y for yes or...
Why for W-H-Y.
Oh, okay. W-H-Y. Okay. But I wanted to mention,
Phonetic Y. Yeah.
Got it. I lived in Taiwan for a couple of years. And of course, in the Chinese calendar, the Chinese calendar is lunar centric. And I found out that the Chinese, even the Chinese, Taiwanese who are Chinese, even those living in the city who can't see the moon because of the city, they still know the phase of the moon because it's their calendar. Whereas I find Americans living in the countryside who can see the moon still don't know where the moon is or what it's doing, or that it follows almost the same path all the time, but just on a different schedule. So
right.
I found that to be a shocking difference between Eastern time and Western time. And then I found out they keep inserting months into the Gregorian calendar through history and so on. And that's why September is 9 instead of 7, things like
that's
that.
That's right. It's very good. Most people, October is 8, November is 9, December. And they give you 4 months where they label the numeric aspect correct. Just like when you take a multiple choice question and answer test, they give you 4 possible answers, right?
Yeah.
But right now, everyone's failing. What's interesting, though, you mentioned about the American here in the Midwest or something. The real savvy ones have these things called farmer's almanacs.
Right.
And they suggest you do certain plantings with certain phases of the moon, right?
Yes.
So it's really interesting how this is the competency aspect of it. Now, in terms of timekeeping, I call that lawful timekeeping. And lawful means you don't have to involve someone else. Usually means you don't have to go into commerce to get what you need. You see, that's why I call it lawful timekeeping, right? Because if you don't have a phone or a wind-up toy known as the clock or a calendar, what day is it? Most people can't reckon that. Where if you do know lawful timekeeping, you just go outside and you can tell.
And then the ultimate insult is daylight savings time, as it's called, which is a joke. But
it's wartime. It's wartime.
Yeah, it's like psychological warfare.
Well, no, actually, it's called day. It, It's called wartime, because during the war they wanted people to work longer and be able to walk home during the daylight. It's one of the aspects. You could actually look up the history on that.
That's wild. But right now, of course, we just went through that in Western society, and it's also hormone disruption for everybody.
Oh yeah,
to keep you off track. But let me bring in Sam on this issue here again. So you know, we're talking about Sam sort of aspects of how the construct of reality has been engineered around us in a way that dissociates us or separates us from the real cosmic reality, right? So you're not supposed to look at the moon or the stars or the sun. You're not supposed to even look inward. You're not supposed to realize who you are, where you came from. You're supposed to believe these artificial systems that are handed to us. This has happened before, but today it seems like it's gone to a whole new level with mobile phones, mobile devices. What are your thoughts on this subject?
Well, I mean, I think we live in a world where nothing is harder to achieve than, you know, understanding the truth with a capital T. People are struggling more than ever to make sense of things, and there doesn't even seem to be a body of knowledge that acts as a reliable measure of truth. I think that the mainstream religions don't do very well. The mainstream media doesn't do it. Academia doesn't do it. None of them have really been able to impart a satisfactory understanding of a lot of the contradictions that we see. That's why one of the things the Greek used to emphasize when we'd speak some years back was how the normalcy of human society is actually dysfunctional. You know, the norms and the institutions that society encourages us to place trust in are actually the source of the problems.
Exactly. And even in medicine, I've often commented that, you know, when doctors say things like, oh, people just get that at your age, I think, wow, that's because the population at large is so unhealthy and on so many medications and processed junk foods that they develop those conditions at that age. And all the doctors think that that's normal and even just causative because of age, which is nonsense. But that kind of thinking pervades every area of society, does it not?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think most people live their lives unaware that entire facets of society are meant to influence their actions and their beliefs, whether it's your parents, the schools, the government, the media. They all work together to create this tier of reality that we call the mainstream. The mainstream is just a place where everything runs on plausible deniability of what everybody thinks that they know. And so basically, you know, stock conventions about reality that don't make any sense.
I like the way you said that. Yeah, it runs on plausible deniability. Isn't it shocking? And let me direct this to the Greek. Isn't it shocking that, you know, for those of us like you two I'm talking to today and our audience, I would consider to be well-informed, people who like to learn, people who like to understand. And yet we interact with other people in the world around us who are completely oblivious. They literally know nothing except the illusions that are put in front of them and perhaps, you know, how to put on their socks and, you know, how to stop by Starbucks and whatever, maybe how to use a credit card, but they know nothing outside of that system. How is it that we find ourselves in a society where there is a widespread ignorance, lack of knowledge, and it seems like there's a sector of society that even revels in that, like they celebrate their ignorance?
Wow, deep question. I would like to go back to the financial at some point, because that's
please.
Been in the back of my mind. But regarding that, it's very simple. Let's just take a broad view. Like, instead of watching this four-hour parade on the sidewalk, let's go up in a helicopter so we see the entire parade in one view, so we don't have to stay on the sidewalk for 4 hours to see the last float, right? So let's take a high vantage point of this. Humans being, I wouldn't say we're part of the animal kingdom, but we're mammalian. You know, we have hearts and lungs like other creatures do and all this. What's interesting is that we don't come pre-downloaded with software where all the other animals do. What I mean by that, for example, is if you have a little tiny puppy dog and you have it raised by gorillas, and then when it matures, you take it home, it's still going to chase a bird. It's still going to chase a stick. You still train it to sit. It's still going to act just like a dog would. You wouldn't know it was raised by gorillas. Now, if you took a human at very, very infant age and you had it raised by gorillas and you brought him home as an adult, he would jump up on the table and take a poo, right? He would act just like a gorilla. See, the dog didn't, because it comes pre-downloaded, with software on how to be a dog. So do the birds, so do the fish, so do the cats, so do most of the animals. We have no pre-download. We have no operating system, no software, no programming. So we come in kind of tabula rasa. You could basically, whatever you input into the human as they're growing, they will exhibit that behavior. Very simple. So once you know that, how simple is it to create sectors in society? And when I mean sectors, where 99.99% of the society is kept in the dark. Should I say that? How many nines do you want to add to that, right?
Right.
It's more like 99.999, that puts it, right, is kept in the dark about mostly everything. And the rest of it is, what should we tell them it is? Because all you need to do is look at any reference manual and see any law book, any medical book, and it contradicts what we're told about those subjects.
Yeah, I've used the term PLFs, or programmable life forms, and I even wonder, and let me ask this question to both of you. I even wonder, what do you believe about souls and consciousness? And are there biological vessels that look human to us that were born without souls, and they are literally incapable of individual self-creative thought? Does that exist in our world? And that would make them more easily programmable. What do you think about that idea?
Go ahead, Sam.
Oh, no, I actually think that that's very much suited for the Greek. I do think that, though, I will say before he jumps in, that some weight should be given to this. You know, it's been theorized that what we perceive to be a three-dimensional universe might just be the image of a two-dimensional one projected across this massive cosmic horizon. So basically simulation theory. And that kind of does account for this anomalous phenomenon where you have people that don't quite seem human, or that subscribe to notions that are completely fallacious, you know, that you wouldn't expect them to, or that act in a programmable manner. I think that there's been different pop culture artifacts that's referred to that over the years. They Live comes to mind, the 1985 sure. movie. Sometimes people will go the extraterrestrial route, sometimes they'll go the simulation theory route. But, you know, I think even in 2016, Bank of America or some big financial institution had crunched numbers and decided that, you know, it's 50-50 chance that the entire universe is just made up of software. But I'll let the Greek elaborate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, it goes back to, I would call more the, you know, we have a spirit, which is our mind, the soul, which is our breath, metabolism, and the physical body. When we speak about the mind, most people immediately go to the materialistic sense that it's all happening in the brain. What I suggest, and it's actually, I've been suggesting this for over two decades, and now it's becoming more common, the brain is nothing more than merely a minor processor that sends and receives, as if our consciousness is part of a cloud system, right? What I mean by this is, you know, you could look at real scientific studies where they try to find memory and things in the brain, and it's just nothing makes sense to them, right? Just like if someone was at a picnic and they had a radio playing jazz music, if you quickly disassembled that radio, would you find a miniature jazz band in there? No, not at all. So we are the concept of the soulless people. It's been popularized. They're called NPCs, for example, or
yes,
you know, whatever shells of.
Right.
Yes, yes. It's very easy to use that reference because it encompasses a very large group, and they all have so much in common that it's actually quite accurate. What's happening?
Let me. This is amazing what you're saying, because you and I must have had a lot of the same influence. Guys, show my screen. I did a book called The Contagious Mind, and I'm showing it. Can you see that on your Skype there, the Greek?
Yes, okay. I'll take a look. Yeah, okay. I'll look at that. Thank you for putting that in there. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a free
thing. That's
exactly
the right track.
Yeah, that's I call
exactly
it the contagious mind, because there's so much evidence out there that exactly as you said, that the mind is actually a broadcaster and a receiver, and it resonates with other people's minds. And there's a cosmic cloud-based network of information sharing or idea sharing, where
right.
a certain group of people come up with an idea, they have a breakthrough or an invention, and then through no physical explanation whatsoever, other people will spontaneously have the same realization. And this has happened again and again throughout history, where inventors accuse each other of stealing each other's patents. But actually, I think it's contagion through this process that you and I are describing. But thanks for letting me interrupt and mention that. We're on the same track.
I know,
go ahead.
No, that's very pertinent. Let's attach this to a very stark example in our society, a very stark one. If you know anyone who operates CB or ham radio, you know the size and dimensions of the antenna are critical to the frequencies you're going to pick
absolutely.
Up.
Absolutely, right.
So when you're an infant, you have this small brain, small body, and it's all working together. It doesn't pick up much, doesn't remember much in most cases. Then you become an adolescent, a teenager, which is almost mature size. And do you ever notice teenagers like to stay up all night?
Yeah.
Right. They stay up all night and sleep during the day. Why? It's not because it's just some social thing. It's because all the adults that have this quote unquote frequency are now down. They're asleep. They're not receiving or broadcasting. And the new adolescent mind that is still clean is looking at the field or sensing the field. They're all asleep. It's so clean out here. We're free. You know, it's like really clean information instead right. of this programming. You see how they're thriving on that. So it's once you see that and you start seeing how it can be applied in many different ways. By the way, you know, a lot of the quote-unquote black projects have taken advantage of this now for over 50 years, you know, oh, with yeah. psychotronics and all that, right? So this is, you know, like, for example, there's a concept called chemtrails, right? Mm-hmm. So if you do a browser search on chemtrails, all the sites are going to say, oh, that's conspiracy theory stuff, whatever. But if you put in stratospheric aerosol injection, you'll mm-hmm. see all these legitimate sites with patents and how – same thing.
Yep.
Right.
Exactly.
So the same, right. You do mind control, you're a conspiracy theorist. But if you start getting into psychotronic influences, you're going to see all the patents. And these are patents, not just for our entertainment, but they're patents, meaning those patents represent 2% or 1% of what has really been developed, right?
Yeah, that's what's fascinating. There's a whole realm of technology that has been prohibited from the masses, but then exploited by governments and, let's say, dark projects, as you said, or globalist institutions to be mm-hmm. used against us. Some would argue that, for example, mRNA technology might be in that same category. Let me go back to Sam on this. Sam, do you have an opinion on that or other similar technologies that might be used against humanity?
Well, when it comes to the unpacking of, you know, black programs and technology, you know, these are things that I'm actually learning a lot about from the Greek, to be honest. I put my contemplation more into the cultural side of things and, you know, the sort of existential metaphysical aspect. It's hard to speak on the science unless you're actually involved in it yourself, either in a recreational sense at home, which, you know, the Greek has a background in working on all kinds of stuff. But I will say that a lot has been written by journalists like, you know, Annie Jacobson about things like the extrasensory projects that the CIA and other intelligence agencies seem very obsessed with getting involved with. They don't speak on it publicly, but then, you know, you'll go back and read during the 60s and 70s that, you know, the Gateway Project, obviously we all know about remote viewing and things of that nature. And it's quite bizarre that they're obsessed with somehow unpacking the supernatural, but then pretending like they're atheists or that they're only scientists or that they don't have any interest in that. I think even in the 80s, there was some type of a run where they were collecting ancient manuscripts from around the world, occult manuscripts, and, you know, giving no explanation for why they'd be interested in these kind of things.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to let me give out your website, by the way, GreekSpeak.com, but it's spelled S-P-E-E-K, GreekSpeak. Again, double E, so the word speak is spelled differently than you would expect. GreekSpeak.com. And then let me ask the Greek here about Project Looking Glass, right? That's something that's in, you know, the mythos of modern conversations. Do you think that was a real project or even that it's
sure.
being used now?
Sure. It can be done several ways. There are several Project Looking Glasses, but the one that you might be referring to is the one that makes rounds on the internet, where they have a device, either found ancient relic or given to men by ET, let's say, that would see snippets of or larger views of the future of either the collective or an individual. Am I on the right track?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, that can be done with a device, yes, and that could also be done mathematically. There are repeats and cycles if you understand how to keep time, haha, right? It won't work if you're using the clock or the calendar. That's why I leaned on it so heavily when we first started speaking. The other aspect of it is, may I just give an example of
yes.
how the time, in order for there, since ancient Greek philosophers, and before that, philosophers and scientists are pondering what time is. Time is merely the recordation of events. If there are no events happening, if there is no change and there's no record of it, there's no time. It's very simple. That's all it is. It's just a record keeping function. what people actually refer to as time is change, things changing, even on an atomic structure, you know, like the half-life of materials is a form of change, which is hence a form of time. So in order for something to exist in the past or the future in an existential universe, it means it already exists. So everything that happened in the past still exists, but in a faded, like a wave that's dissipated at a great distance. And everything that is going to happen in the future already exists, but in a very proto stage, right? Almost like in a thought stage. I'll give you an example. You cannot change the past, but you can influence it. And this is the example that I give to people. Have you ever been in a tight spot in your life where something went really bad, an accident, an incident or something, and you were almost in a panic and you heard a little voice inside tell you everything's going to be okay, mm-hmm. right? Many people have experienced that. What I suggest that little voice really is you in the future recalling that event and sending the signal back. You see? Mm-hmm. Now, this is something that someone brought up. If you're in a tight spot or in a bad accident or something and you don't hear that little voice, two things are possible. One is you're not going to make it. And the other thing is, right, in the future. And the other thing is you will probably forget this and not recall it. So what I'm suggesting is when you hear that little voice in the past or in an event, it's you in the future communicating with yourself.
Or maybe your future self hates your present self and wants you to suffer through the event as a learning experience.
Sure. But I don't think we really, that's a temperance and tolerance aspect.
Right, temperance and tolerance. You got it. No, but that's a really great example of that. And time especially combined with consciousness, can be quite fluid, right? So, but when we talk about the future, you said in a proto state, doesn't that mean that there are many alternative possible futures that are in the process of perhaps materializing, that they're not quite materialized yet, then it kind of collapses into one of them in the present? Is that how that works?
Yes. Yes, but no. Like, for example, let's say I come to the studio and I open a pouch and all these little black, little seed look round objects fall out of the bag. And you ask me what they are. And I said, they're seeds. They're tree seeds, right? And if I take one as an apple seed and I plant it, that little tiny apple seed will become an apple tree, right? One is an oak. Another one is this, you know, different types of seeds of trees. You can't see it. When I hold them in my hand, you see these little black specks in my hand. They're all seeds for trees. You can't see that. You can't even make the connection, but you can because you know the process, right? But if you don't know the process, you didn't know that trees were grown from tiny little seeds like that, you'd be befuddled by it, the whole thing. And it would be a concept that would be very difficult for you to grasp as an adult.
So I can't help but think in this metaphor that we are living in a construct right now that is the result of seeds of obedience that have been planted by the global controllers. Like they know how these things work. They planted these seeds, you know, in the 50s, the 60s, the 1970s, and so on. And they have grown a construct around the masses that keeps the masses imprisoned in their the mental prisons of their own making, where they even enforce their own prisons. Is that a fair analogy of kind of what we're looking at?
Yes and no. It would be more like a virtual prison of the mind, let's say. It would be, think of it in an old Taoist sense, it's the space between the bars that keeps the tiger in the cage. Right, because if there was no space, there would be no bars, and it's the silent parts between the notes that make the music. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is, if you just jump through, you know, when in between notes, when it's silent, that's where you get your silence. In between the bars of the cage is where you see there is no obstruction, right? And I wanted to give the financial example that you asked Sam earlier. Sitting in the back.
It's going to
be very short.
Okay, but first let me mention I did disassemble a piano once, and I didn't find any music inside. It was just baffling. There was no music in there, and I'm pretty sure if I tested the black keys and the white keys in my lab, I would still not find any music whatsoever. So how can that be?
Yeah, perturbation. Everything in the universe, the material universe, which is limited. Like, for example, if you have an ailment and someone provides you with a plant that heals, treats, or cures that ailment, and it works, you will understand that concept, right? If you feel this way, you get this plant and it works. But if you give it to someone who has been taught that there's only materialism, they will take that plant, crush it, and burn it to find out what effective right. chemical is in there, right? Yes. And it will never work as well as the whole plant. So you have to take it, quote unquote, holistically. Find out how something works where it's good enough and just leave it alone because it was put that way for a reason, you see?
Exactly.
Yeah. So these things, this is what the Greek speak is about. Let's just look really, really close within your own environment, and you will see that pretty much everything is there. You know, like with the poison ivy. Poison ivy won't grow unless it's in the vicinity of white oak. What is white oak bark? The treatment, you see? So like you said, the prison, I think that if they're going to create a prison, in order for it to be a balanced universe, not just a balanced earth, they have to daily give you a cake with a file baked in it. But because they're giving you a chocolate cake and you're allergic to chocolate, you're never going to open the cake to find out there's a hacksaw or a file to cut through, you see? Mm-hmm. They're giving you the actual whoever they are. And that's where the financial part comes in.
Yeah, go ahead. Bring it in.
It's such, you see, what is money? It's very simple. When you have a perfect society, you live off of the land, quote unquote, you know, mining, minerals, agriculture, water, everything you need is where you are. When you want to travel, right, you're not going to bring your land with you. You have to bring a representation of the land. That's why, since ancient times, it was you mine precious metal, precious materials, gold, silver, diamonds, whatever, and you use that to trade. It's portable land. That's all it is. From ancient times till now. So what was found out by the elite a long time ago is if we control money, it's also in the biblical text. I think in Psalms it says that money will pretty much fix most problems, right? So if you take control of the money, you take control of all the transactions, exchange, and thoughts and desires of people because of what money can get you, right? Now, what I tell people, especially living here in the United States of America, is you've heard of the 4th of July. And everyone says, yes, of course. Some people sarcastically say, it's just the day after July 3rd, right? But, okay. Well, I said, well, that was the founding of the country. But have you heard of March the 9th, 1933? And most people, even historians, say no. Well, March 9th, 1933 was when this country ended as a republic, as a country, as whatever, and became basically bankrupt to the private banking cabal. And in bankruptcy, a business is usually liquidated to pay the creditors, but they decided to not liquidate it. Just like if there was an old store in your neighborhood, it went bankrupt. It's called receivership. They come in and they have new people managing it, and everything in the till goes to these other people that bought the business, let's say, right? So this country, United States of America, and all the other countries are in what's called receivership. Right. And we're working on credit. That's why when you look on a $20 bill, by the way, who's going to pay those bills? Right. It doesn't say Federal Reserve Bank. It says Federal Reserve System. So there are no banks anymore. What I mean by this is very simple. All of the money that's garnered and used in exchange by quote unquote financial institutions is drawn from your signature. If you go to a bank and ask, you were approved for a $10,000 boat loan, say, show me what account you're going to take that money from to give to me to buy the boat. They can't because they wait for you to sign the paper. They have a transaction number and they enter it. Now some people might blur off over those details, but let's do a real simple, super simple example. Okay, I'm just going to use common talk here. Okay, guys. I have a bank account, a checking account, and it's at minus $1,000 right now. Minus $1,000. Can I write you a check for $100? The answer is no, right? Now, here's the interesting point. If someone gave me $1,000 to put into the bank account that is now minus $1,000, can I write you a check for $100? I still can't. It's at zero, right? Let's just say there are no fees attached. Okay, so people got a $1,000 stimulus check. So I say, I go to the computer, treasury.gov, and it says they're $23 trillion in debt. How can they write you a check for $1,500 and it be money based on basic accounting? It's impossible. Now, let's just stretch this a little bit more. I'll show you how practical this is. If some way someone deposited $23 trillion with the U.S. Treasury, could they write one person a $1,500 check? Mm-hmm. The answer is no, they still can't. Now, as you know, you can go to treasury.gov and the debt is what? Is it getting bigger or smaller? It's getting bigger, mm-hmm. bigger. That is merely a formality. There is no debt because it's already under receivership. It's already owned by the private banks. The Federal Reserve notes and checks and using a bank means that you agree that the private banks have a first position lien on everything you do and say, until you say, for example, no, I want lawful money. I'm making a demand for lawful money. And this is in their codes. It's 12 USC 411. Okay, so the example that I give for money is, you know how people refer to it as monopoly money or whatever? That's pretty much what it is. But you're living in a society where if you are hungry and you go to a merchant and you walk out with a loaf of bread, what is he going to say? Wait, you have to what? Pay for that, right? Mm-hmm. So the merchants don't know what's going on. I think that if most people knew what was going on, sadly, everyone just cover their ears, are still not going to do anything about it. You see, because they're just happy with it, if you get what I mean. It's going to take a level of moral and ethic evolution, I mean a rise upgrade, in order to say this is not lawful, what's going on, you see.
Well, right, but what's the alternative? Because as a society, we do need some means of proxy exchange to represent right. our goods and services and land and food and whatever. Sure. What's the system that can work, you think?
Oh, simple. You just base it. What they're doing, you see how I said earlier, when you go get a loan from the bank or the government sends you a check, they draw it off of your signature. Let me just make this one point. When you get a check for, you know about fractional banking, anyone could look it up. It's 10 to sure. 1. When a deposit is made in a bank, you get 9 times that. Okay, let me just expose something here. This is all verifiable and validatable. You got a check for $1,000. What do they call them? Stimulus checks? People or 15 or 600? Let's make $1,000 very simple, right? You go to the bank, and remember, this $1,000 is drawn off an account that's minus 23 trillion, okay? Keep that in mind. All right. So you go to the bank and you hand the bank teller the check, and she looks at it and gives it back to you, says, I can't use it. Why? Because you have to endorse the back. Right? Duh. Okay, so now we have two signatures on it. It's a valid commercial instrument. She puts in a $1,000 deposit, but what the software in the computer does is creates $10,000. Okay? They give you the $1,000. They're left with $9,000. The bank takes a third of that, and the third of that goes to the government. So the government is actually funding their projects by sending you checks. How crazy is that? What I just told you is 100% verifiable and validatable by looking at, let's say, the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago Modern Money Mechanics, or speaking to anyone that knows the financial industry. What I mean by that is, whether it's medical industry, financial industry, legal, scientific, when you have a certain system that works a certain way, even though it's unlawful, when you have people that work for you that interact with the public, the less those people that interact with the public know about the real workings, the better off you are. Any illicit operation works that way.
Yeah, so how yes.
do we, you see? Yeah.
But I would let me add to that a couple of things. During COVID, the fractional reserve banking requirement was dropped almost to zero for many banks. So the multiplication factor that you just mentioned, 10 to 1, has gone even much higher for a lot of
900 to, yeah 960 in Asia to what
right exactly right. Right, and then the other thing that I've noticed is that the government needs to create crisis after crisis so they can have excuses for stimulus after stimulus for the reasons that you just mentioned, right? So as you said, the stimulus is actually funding back the government. So they have to find ways to keep pumping money into the hands of the people. And look at what just happened with Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank and Silvergate. Mm-hmm. Massive FDIC bailout. Now check this out. Sort don't of. Mind me. Yeah, sort of.
No, go ahead. Yeah, no, because the Federal Reserve just changed their rules and the FDIC doesn't matter. Go ahead.
Exactly. But here's what I want to mention. So Silicon Valley Bank had the customer deposits, because they couldn't loan them out to as many people as a bank normally would. They bought these 10-year bonds with low yields, right? 1.5%, 1.56% yields. And those bonds were losing money because the Fed raised interest rates. And so they were being, quote, bailed out by the FDIC with its emergency fund. But where is that emergency fund held? It's held by the FDIC buying government bonds, which are also losing money. So someone's going to have to bail out the FDIC, which is bailing out the banks. And just as you said, the government's going to have to print and flood every layer of the system, and it's all going to come back to the government to keep basically the debt Ponzi going. That's where I just wanted to add that observation.
Sure. Sure. Well, there's a big change since the United States government went into receivership. I beckon that people please look up bankruptcy receivership, what that means. I usually use the ice cream shop as an analogy. You have a 70-year-old ice cream shop goes bankrupt, and instead of shutting it down because it's a fixture in the neighborhood, the creditors come in and they put in their own people to run it. And now you notice there's some changes. Like instead of it being this wonderful ice cream, you see like a nacho, chips and nacho machine, right? And you see this other thing. You're like, wait a second, why are they doing this? You know, that by the way, the chips and nacho machine represent agencies that have been put in since 1933, if you know what I mean, in air quotes, things that are not within the subject matter. But I would invite you to consider that when you say the government, this, it's not the government, it's they're using the label as the government. Just like, for example, Federal Express is not part of the government. You and I can open a federal hardware store. What I'm telling you is, and this is really immovable, that the United States government, de jure, or lawful government, don't no longer exist. It is under receivership, period. Mm-hmm. And everything that's put out is just put on that label. Very similar to how a car companies were bought by other car companies. I think Chrysler was bought by Daimler-Benz, and I have one, and it says Chrysler on it, but when I get into the parts, it says Daimler-Chrysler, you see? So yeah, it's Federal Reserve, United States government. So it's very interesting. It's all to distract you. Not necessarily. Yes, it is a lot of energy is putting in to distract you, but now they're running out of energy to distract you. So they have to start telling you where you're going and what they're planning on doing next. You see, and it's been done for over 90 years. And we just kind of leaned heavily on the financial, but the medical one is a big one. And I just want to suggest to anyone listening to me, go online. And type in cross-section of human intestine, cross-section of human skin, cross-section of lung tissue. You get where I'm going with this? And you'll see plenty of anatomically correct drawings online. And then I want you to split your screen and do cross-section of a steel-belted radial tire. And if you look at the cross-sections of all of our human tissue and a bicycle tire, a motorcycle tire, a car tire, you will see that the structures are the same. Nothing ever passes through. So they basically have been telling humanity that we are a bunch of pressurized filter bags that absorb nutrients and all this stuff. None of that is happening. It's all by induction, right? And once this becomes sorry, I had to really put this in, because once we understand how our bodies really work, and what we really need from food and water and environment, that's when we're really going to become like the Jetsons, you know, the futurists, the future society. Yep. As long as we don't understand how our own bodies work, or even money or anything like that, we're just going to be continuing the same way.
Well, you just opened a couple doors that are going to take, I think, future conversations, of course, but which also, I can't believe that we burned through so much time here already. We're going to have to wrap this up today, but I want to invite you back to talk about especially anatomy, biology, nutrition, medicine, all of that, because the medical world is so filled with spellcasters, almost like necromancers, you know? They cast spells on people like, you're going to die from cancer if you don't start this chemotherapy today. And it's incredible the effect that that has on people. But let me ask both of you, Sam and the Greek, give us your final thoughts here as we wrap this up. We're out of time for today. But Sam, I apologize, you know, we could spend hours in these conversations. This is only a teaser today for people. But what would you like to leave people with in terms of remembering this conversation?
Yeah, I would just invite people to consider more this notion of the world being a fake place. Whether you know you want to go extreme with that, with the simulation notion, or just the idea that so many people are censored that it's tantamount to something that's fake that you have to navigate and be very critical of. It's not so much, I find, losing oneself in what they call conspiracy theories or these groupings of people, whether it's QAnon or whatever, but it's just being aware that everything around you has the veneer of being decidedly fake. Everything is a contradiction or a paradox. No one really knows anything for sure, no matter how loudly they profess to. And, you know, beneath the subject, the surface of your public affairs and your religion and your culture, there is this fundamental commonality that this unnamed force keeps people in the dark about stuff. And this is something that's worth looking at just past, you know, the alt media stuff. It's referenced in ancient text, it's referenced in philosophy. And it's something that you can be very extensive in your research about. So I would just invite people to consider that.
Okay, excellent. Good information. Again, I want to mention your website, GreekSpeak.com, and the word speak is spelled S-P-E-E-K. And then to the Greek, what would you like to say here at wrapping up today's interview?
Sure. First, it's a pleasure to have made your acquaintance. And also, I hope what I have said and Sam have said have shown some new direction to your listenership. And we have probably some new people that might want to listen to what we have to say.
Indeed, very much so. And let me give out your where people can find you again. It's Ocelli.com, O-C-H-E-L-L-I, Ocelli Effect. I guess that's the name of the site. And then your show is called Ocelli and the Greek. Rated Y, and that's a subscription only show, correct?
Correct. It's a Sonic Events. Yes.
Sonic Events.
I call them Sonic Events. Yeah. No dogs, no ponies. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. All right. Fair enough. That's great. Well, to both of you, let me just thank you for taking the time to join me today and just kind of, you know, throw a few teasers out there about this. I think we live in a time where more and more people are questioning their reality, so-called reality, because the reality they were taught is in fact falling apart right before their very eyes. So what better time to start asking the really big questions? And I think that's what we did today. So thank you both for joining me. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And best to you both on your projects, and keep in touch. We'll talk again. And for those of you watching, I hope you enjoyed this conversation. This is why I built Brighteon.com, folks, because we want to have uncensored free speech conversations. And we want to go way beyond just alt media, frankly. We want to go into the nature of reality, the cosmos, consciousness, all of it. How are we connected, and what's the future of human civilization? Because, well, frankly, we're shaping it right now. So let's shape one that we want to live in. But thank you for watching today. I'm Mike Adams. Feel free to share this interview on other platforms. You have our permission to do so. Thank you for watching today, everybody. Take care. A global reset is coming, and that's why I've recorded a new 9-hour audiobook. It's called The Global Reset Survival Guide. You can download it for free by subscribing to the naturalnews.com email newsletter, which is also free. I'll describe how the monetary system fails. I also cover emergency medicine and first aid and what to buy to help you avoid infections. So download this guide. It's free. It's my gift to you, simply because I want like-minded people to survive.